everybody, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Tinseltown. And I have a fabulous guest for us today. She is funny. She's written such fun books. She is a Hollywood historian, classic Hollywood historian, and she has done so much stuff. I am thrilled to have you. Her name is Lori Jacobson, and I bet you guys have read her book or seen her somewhere on an entertainment show or anywhere. I am so thrilled you can come on. Thank you so much, Lori. Hiya.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
I told Lori how I came about doing it because her book, which we're going to talk about some scandals today, which I love, of course, and I'd like your opinion on them because I agree with a lot of your opinions, but this book was written a while ago, and it's called Dishing Hollywood, The Real Scoop on Tinseltown's Most Notorious Scandals, and you can still get this book. It's on Amazon. My friend and I read this a while ago, and we just died, and whatever gave you the idea, not only do you get the book, you guys, and all the scandal stuff, and it's a fun read because Lori writes really fun, it's not like serious, but it's serious, but fun. And what gave you the idea to use menus at the end of each chapter, a recipe?
I make murder and scandal fun.
You do, which is, sometimes I go, boy, am I such a morbid human being, but I laugh, but I'm like, geez, it's all like too much seafood here. I'm allergic to shellfish. So I'm like, I can't eat.
You're funny.
The drinks are good, though, I have to say.
And well, I wrote my first book in 1984. It was called Hollywood Heartbreak. And, Here's how it all started. I moved to L.A.
Yes.
And in the mid-70s, mm-hmm. I'm going to a movie with a friend, and we drive past this hotel, and he says, Janis Joplin died there. So I'm stunned. You know, it had only been, a few years earlier, like 4 years earlier. And every time I drove by it, I became obsessed. So one day, finally, I stopped. I pulled over. I went inside. This is before it was popular to have a celebrity die in your establishment. So when I asked about it, they denied it, but they gave me access to the place and said I could walk around. So I'm walking around, and some guy comes out of his apartment and asks me who I was looking for. I tell him why I'm there, and he said, I lived here then. I helped break down her door.
Wow.
Let me take you to the spot and tell you what I remember from that night. So then I was hooked, So then I began finding places all over L.A. that had a history, an event, a scandal, a death, an unsolved mystery. And so I'm smoking a joint with a very dear friend of mine who is now in heaven, and he says, you should do a map to death spots of the stars.
Wow, and now it's so popular. You would have made a fortune.
Right, and I thought, I'll have a team of really good-looking young boys selling these. after the smoke cleared, I started a book, and that became Hollywood Heartbreak. And, that came out in 84, as I said, and I was really one of the few women historians out there. So that made me an anomaly.
Yes.
And I have a background in comedy.
Yes, and, very impressive.
And in theater, I had theater and drama and comedy. And so back then, not all authors could talk. most people wrote because they couldn't handle themselves on screen.
Right.
You know, so here was somebody who could do both. And so suddenly it just took off for me. I did a lot of television appearances. I did a ton of, I was in a ton of documentaries. I was immediately hired to write documentaries. And I worked for 10 years with this fabulous producer named Jack Haley Jr.
Oh, my. Liza's ex and the Tin Man's son.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Liza's ex, the Tin Man's son. And, you know, he had, in the 70s, he did That's Entertainment, which, you know, was just my ideal thing. So, I mean, through him, I met everyone who was still alive that I cared to
How
meet.
How cool.
Oh. And we celebrated them and saluted them and did all, we worked on the most wonderful things. I was the writer and producer of the 20th anniversary of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and we did a great special with their cast, and it was just fabulous.
I interviewed Ed Asner. I totally fell in love with him.
Yes, he was great. They were all great. Really.
I own the Mary Tyler Moore. You know, I have all of the episodes on DVD, and I love it. And every so often, when I feel, I'll put on Mary, and especially the first couple seasons, and I feel so much better. So that's really cool. You met all those people, and you got to meet a lot of Hollywood greats, you know, that didn't die yet. Because I have these two.
Really. Yes. And, you know, and Jack, he was really one of the last of the great raconteurs. He had stories about everyone. Fabulous, wonderful stories. And also from his parents' day. His mom was a Ziegfeld girl.
Wow.
She, when she got married, she opened a hair salon in Beverly Hills, and like in the 30s, women would go to her for what I call below the belt bobs.
Wow.
This was my typical work day.
Oh my God.
Jack,
how fun is that though? Who knew?
Would have a couple of belts before he came into the office.
What a riot.
Out of him. So I was just,
dream job.
You know, shocked, really. And so there were all these marvelous stories about, you know, pubic hairstyling and stars and lightning bolts. And I'm like, really? You know, because we thought each generation thinks they invented it all, right?
Yes.
But so, you know, so he just, it was just a delightful, delightful decade with him. I just loved it.
Oh, I would have. I'm so envious. I'm so jealous, Lori. I really am.
So then, during that time, I found additional information about many of the people I had written about in Hollywood Heartbreak, and I needed a new way to present some of the same stories with that new information. And then, of course, I had new stories to add. So that is how I came up, to get back to your first question, why did I put recipes in Dishing Hollywood? That's why. That was my new way of, that was my way of bringing new information to some cases that I had already covered. And because I don't cook a lick, so it wasn't my love of cooking and recipes.
Yes, that, you're no Julia Child, and I'm with you. I hear you. Me either. But it's great. It's such a fun book, and I don't have, but can I get it? Because I couldn't find, I think on your website, you say I can get it, Hollywood Heartbreak.
Yeah, now that has been out of print for a while, and I may have a copy around here I could send you.
Oh, I would love
and,
it.
And, it's out there on Amazon used and eBay and stuff, but, sure, if I have an extra copy, I would be more than happy to send it to you.
You're a darling. I love it. So we're going to talk, we're going to dish. Lori and I are going to dish, but she also has done Haunted Hollywood. I want to talk about that someday. And I'm getting tonight, I'm very excited because we get deliveries late here in my building, I think until about 8. And I love the name of this, Timmy's in the Well. And it's the memoirs of Lori's husband, John, with no H, Provost, who was Timmy in the was it called Timmy and Lassie, or was it just Lassie?
At the time, it was called Lassie. In syndication, it has become Timmy and Lassie.
So that's so cool. So he, I, you know, you're married to Mr., you know, Lassie's friend. I bet there's a lot of scandals on Lassie I would love to know about in that book. Are there? Does he have some real truth? You don't tell me because I don't want it to be spoiled. But, you know, I guess Lassie, the big scandal was that Lassie is gender fluid, right? Lassie's supposed to be a girl, but they always had boy Lassies.
Lassie was the first female impersonator on television.
I could never tell. She was fabulous. He was fabulous, darling. He was so good.
One of my favorite stories about that is we all, you know, 20 years ago, nobody knew what a merkin was. But do you know what it is?
Yes. I'm up on my pubic knowledge. Yes, pubic hair knowledge.
Oh, so one day Lassie gets a rash and starts losing his coat in his private area, revealing that Lassie was indeed a male. So they had to do something about that quickly. So they actually went to Max Factor, made a merkin. Lassie.
That is a scandal. I love it. A scoop, people.
Which caused June Lockhart, who played John's mother on the show, which caused her to come up with a Christmas song, Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly, Hide the Balls on That Old Collie.
Oh my God.
It was something they did not share with John when he was a little boy.
I bet. But what a...
June told us.
I love it. And what a scandal. What? Scoops. Merkins. Lassie. I am just really, you know, boy, oh boy, true stories from Tinseltown. I'm heating up here, Lori. This is some great stuff. But I'm really looking forward to reading the book. I really am. And your husband has can come on anytime. And if you want to do it with him, that would be great. But I'm really looking forward to reading the book and finding out
the
scoop.
And let me just say about that book, one thing that I really wanted to do was, you know, not everyone is a fan of Lassie and the show. So we wanted to make it bigger than that. And we interviewed close to 100 people for the book.
Wow.
Many of his peers from that time. So really what you get is a full picture of what it was like to be a working child actor in Hollywood in the 50s and 60s. And you also get a picture of what it was like for a typical American family to be touched by that kind of enormous fame that John had. His show was seen in over 120 countries.
Wow. Lassie.
At a time when there were only 3 channels. You know, at least one third of this country was watching him. You know, everyone knew who he was. There wasn't one place he could go. You know, so far more people called him Timmy than called him John.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're 7, that's a little confusing.
He was just a baby. My God. You think about these moms and dads and these showbiz parents, and it's like, geez, guys, you know, I don't know. I would be very wary. And I have friends who ask me about getting their kids in show business. And I have a friend who's a stage father. He has 2 twins, a boy and a girl. They're absolutely beautiful. They are a year and a half, and he's already being a stage father. Because he's an actor and he's a musician. But, you know, they're just babies. But, you know, whatever. I just, you know, I'm not too thrilled with it.
What you find out is really, it's all up to the parents.
Of course it is.
It's all about how the parents handle it. And,
right.
In the 50s and 60s, the parents were flying by the seat of their pants. Television was a brand new industry.
Right.
And there were no rules. Nobody knew anything. Mistakes get made that way, and children get hurt.
Definitely. I mean, they are children. People forget that. And, you know, this thing with movies, people see them on the big screen. But the thing when television came in, you saw them week to week to week. So you felt like you knew these people, that they were your friends or family. And hence him being called Timmy and people asking him, how's Lassie girl? And is she wearing a merkin? You know, I can't believe that. That's a riot. Oh, I love that story, Lori. But I can't wait to read it, and I will definitely, you know, I'm going to link up your website and all that stuff so that everybody can check it out, because Lori is a really good, fun, engaging writer, and you want to read her stuff, and I laugh out loud. I'm reading it over again. I hadn't read it for years, and I am laughing out loud and also going like, ah, sad, and sometimes I feel like a monster for laughing out loud, but you're very funny. You write really funny, so... Lori's stuff is great. So let's talk some scandals other than Lassie, the Merkin scandal. Okay. Which one do I want to start with? How about the, I love Jean Harlow. I think she is fab. She's so funny. She was just a young girl. And the Paul Byrne story. Now there's new stuff that came out about it. What do you think? Do you think he killed himself?
Yes.
You do?
Yes. First of all, she is just one of my absolute favorites.
Mine too. She's just amazing.
It's unbelievable what a short time in Hollywood she had. She was 26 years old when she died?
And think of her things. And she was like 22 doing Red Dust or Bombshell or any of those amazing flicks she did. She was amazing.
She really was. And she was so determined. I mean, she didn't start out good. She just started out hot, you know, incredible looking. Nobody looked like Jean Harlow. And she got hired for that alone. And she wasn't very good. But she was so determined to get good, and she worked so hard, and she was the first one on the set and the last one to leave, and asking advice of Spencer Tracy. They got very close, and he was so impressed with her determination, and then she became fabulous. She just those fast talking. Wonderful 30s films, you know, and she was so funny.
And adorable. Yeah, you just love Jean. Men and women love Jean. She was like the first blonde bombshell because during the summer I did with my friend the history of blonde bombshells, and we started off with Jean, and Jean is just incredible, and I love her, and I can watch her movies over and over again. But you do believe Paul Byrne killed himself.
She had a real daddy thing going on. She really didn't have a father in the picture, and she had a horrible stepfather. And, you know, I mean, for example, her mother and her stepfather and all of her friends, as a consequence, called her baby or the baby. You know, even on the set, people called her that. So, you know, she wasn't really a fully mature woman, and she went for older guys looking for that daddy image, and Paul Byrne was one of them. He was so well educated and refined on the surface. He was a big producer at MGM, And he helped refine her image and took her from the brassy blonde she started out playing and made her more palatable and more sophisticated. But he had a lot of... he had a lot of sexual problems, and he thought the solution would lie in marrying the world's biggest sex goddess, that that would help him. But it didn't help him. It just made things worse. They had a terrible marriage, which lasted just 2 short months. And I believe out of hatred for her, he killed him. She was out of the house, and he waited until he heard her come home. And then she heard a gunshot, and he had killed himself in their bedroom, naked, in front of a full-length mirror. And, you know, it was all to... it was a very vindictive move.
So that note, he did write it, you think?
He left a what is famously referred to as a cryptic note, mm-hmm. Saying, last night was just a comedy, there is a school of thought that the note was written sometime before. It might have just been days before,
right?
And they used that as a suicide note to prove that it was suicide because she was a suspect. In the beginning, you know, they always suspect the spouse, and the studio moved very quickly to protect her, and they grabbed up that note and said, "See, this proves it was suicide." Then it came out later that yes, he was married previously, or at least a common law marriage, mm-hmm. with a woman named Dorothy Millett. And Dorothy suffered a nervous breakdown and a complete memory loss. And he left her in an institution in New York because the living situation with her was just untenable. He went to Los Angeles. He became very successful. He paid for her keep back in New York, but suddenly, after years, she regains her memory and wants to know where her lover, Paul Byrne, is. And he's in Hollywood, married to one of the biggest stars in the world. So she did come to him that night while Jean was out. And there is a thought that she killed Paul Byrne. But I don't... And then the next day when it was announced that he was dead, she jumped off a boat and killed herself. So it looked like, oh, she was guilty maybe, right. And she killed herself. But I don't think she killed him. I think she just begged him to return.
So what happened now? You say he did it out of an act of hatred. He hated her because he could not, he thought she would make him the man he wanted to be. And and he blamed her for it and wanted to punish her.
Yes.
Do you think their marriage was ever consummated?
Not sure.
Do you think he did have sex with Dorothy?
I don't know about their sex life. I mean, they were deeply in love, and they were together, you know, years on the East Coast. Mm. And, you know, he was a lot younger, and the older you get, the more of a hold these problems take. you know, a gene. He was the only guy who hadn't come on like gangbusters with Gene. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody tried to get to first base with Gene immediately, mm-hmm. believing her image was how she was. So she took Paul Byrne's slow approach as a compliment, and that he was truly a gentleman. And she loved the way he treated her, and he introduced her to books and films, and he helped educate her, and she was hungry for all of that. So when they got married, I guess she found out. I mean, people certainly approached her, friends certainly approached her and said, you know, he's gay, he's this, he's that, but he treated her so well before the marriage that she thought that was the definition of true love.
And then,
or I guess she hoped it was. But, you know, she's a young girl.
She was just a kid.
And eventually she wants to get laid.
Of course. Tell us,
and I would suspect that did not happen. I would suspect that did not happen, and that that's... You know, she made probably some terrible comments to him, and you know, it just went downhill from there. I mean, 2 months, that's almost a record.
Yeah, that's like nothing, and then boom, scandal.
From marriage to suicide, that's pretty bad.
Pretty bad. Another one you talked about, and I have talked about too, is Lana Turner and Johnny Stompanato. And Cheryl.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. And you said, and we did Lana as well as the Bombshell. She was, you know, in the 40s Bombshell, but she actually came around in the 30s. And we talked about Johnny Stompanato, and I find so much of it so questionable, as people still do today. Correct.
You mean who actually stuck the knife in his gut?
Right. Or did he just walk into it, which is so crazy. The lack of blood, the position of the body. There were, you know, what do you think?
Well, for those who don't know the story, you know, Lana, who what ended up being married 7 or 8 times?
7 times.
Total.
She said the last one was a hypnotist, and she thinks he hypnotized her into marrying her.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So she started seeing Johnny Stompanato, who was a low-level mob employee. Who basically made his money living off of wealthy women. He was supposed to be very good looking, if you like that greasy kind of look.
Yeah,
that he had.
I just didn't think so. And he also, his pants were up to his chest. Did you notice that too? He wears like Fred Mertz pants, and he's like a young guy, a young stallion, supposedly.
Yes.
Not my yes. type, that's for sure.
You know, and the... The Hollywood stars and the mob were fascinated by one another. Mm-hmm. Like Jean Harlow was a good friend of Bugsy Siegel's. You know, they it was titillating for both sides. Mm-hmm. You know, so when there were you know, secret speakeasies and places to go in the 20s, the mob and Hollywood celebrities got very friendly. Mm-hmm. And Jean was good friends with Bugsy Siegel, and she was even godmother to one of his children. So, you know, that carries on with Lana. She gets involved with Johnny Stompanato, which in the beginning was exciting, but he was physically abusive. And, you know, she often had to cover bruises to hide what was going on.
And black eyes and things like that, yeah.
Pretty bad. So, cut to her daughter, Cheryl Crane, is staying with her, and Stompanato is staying in the house. Lana chooses that evening to tell him that he is not going to accompany her to the Oscars that year, which, of course, was a huge deal for him because, to go to that.
Yeah, so and that he could actually...
there is a terrible fight. And Cheryl, outside her mother's door, hears him say, I'm going to cut your face. I'm going to ruin you. I'm going to ruin your face. So according to the story they told the police, Cheryl runs downstairs, grabs a knife, runs back to her mother's bedroom, opens the door, and charges in holding the knife, and Stompanato turns around and impales himself on the knife.
Like you said, he murdered himself.
Yes, that's what he, his boss was Mickey Cohen, nicknamed the King of the Sunset Strip. Mm-hmm. And Mickey Cohen said he's the only guy I know who is convicted of murdering himself. Now, there is a one part of the story is that, you know, he didn't die right away. But, he, you know, stomach wounds are, especially then, were almost always fatal. And, you know, you never called the police when this kind of stuff happened. You called your studio. Mm-hmm. And they called a lawyer named Jerry Giesler, who represented all of the big stars and got them all out of trouble.
The fixer.
And, you know, the rumor is that Giesler showed up at the house and Stompanato was still alive, and they just freaking waited there until he bled out.
Ew. But where was all the blood? They said there was really, Lana had a pink bedroom and there was no red blood on her pink carpet. Not a lot. It just seems strange. And they said that they don't think he was murdered where he fell. I don't know. I can see Cheryl doing it, but for him just walking into it, I guess it's possible. But, you know, wow.
Well, you know, Cheryl, who was only 15, was a minor. Mm-hmm. So it was much easier on Lana for Cheryl to take the rap. She got 6 months in a juvenile detention center and came home and lived with grandma after that. And it didn't hurt Lana's career one little bit.
It sort of made her career because she was getting older. Look at her. She got nominated for Peyton Place. She went on with, I don't know.
Madame X, which was...
Yeah, that's...
You know...
She's a
slightly on that.
And what else did she? She did Portrait in Black, and she did Imitation of Life. Did that come after Peyton Place?
I thought that was before, mm-hmm. but no, I could be wrong.
She wasn't harmed. This was a scandal. Lana, at first, they were turning on her, and then didn't Mickey Cohen release like love letters that Lana had written to Johnny?
Yes, release them to the newspapers.
Right.
You know, trying to defame her. You know, it's really as if her fans and the public never expected her to be a good mother. You know,
she was always out. She was a glamour puss deluxe. She was
after husband.
Well, look at Lex Barker had molested Cheryl for years, and then he blamed her, and then he said it never happened.
Yeah. So, you know, she was not paying attention to what was going on at home, and that didn't surprise anybody. So it wasn't like the public was horrified by this sudden thing. You know, it was like, oh, Lana Turner's a lousy mother. Yeah, what else is new? You know, so it didn't affect her career at all. And in the end, they sort of applauded her carrying on.
Yeah.
And Stompanato was, you know, a mob guy. So who cared, really, that
right.
he got killed? Only Mickey Cohen cared.
So do you believe the scenario that they told us?
Well, Cheryl stuck with the story forever.
Yes, you know, she did, and she wrote her own book. And then they did a Lana picture book, like a coffee table book, which was very good. Cheryl stuck to that. And what good would it do? People say, why would Cheryl stick to it? Well, why wouldn't she? But I don't know. I wasn't there. That's my whole thing. I wasn't there.
You know, you love your mother. She loved her mother. You know, what good would it do, even when her mother was dead, to say, hey, by the way, my mother really killed Johnny Stampinato.
She didn't need that.
It would have been great, you know, fodder for the rumor mill and the, you know, us people like us. But, you know, why disrupt her mother's legacy?
So you think it's possible that Lana did take his life?
Yeah, absolutely possible. It's possible that he had a knife and was going after Lana and there was a fight, you know. Because he was saying, I'm going to cut your face. That implies that there was a knife already in the room.
He was a big boy. And Lana's tiny. Cheryl was very tall. But he seemed to be a very big guy, you know.
He was beefy.
Yeah.
You know, big shoulders and he
pants up to
Lana.
His chin. Yeah.
And my favorite thing is he was staying. He had a room at the Del Capri Hotel.
What was
that? On Wilshire in Westwood. And my uncle, Jerry Steinbaum, his friend owned the hotel. So Johnny gets killed. No one comes forward to claim his stuff. He has these beautiful silk shirts embroidered with the initials JS.
That wasn't even his real name. And he lied to Lana about his age as well.
Uncle's friend calls his friend Jerry Steinbaum and says, I got these beautiful silk shirts nobody's coming for. They have your initials on them.
No way. Did he wear them?
Way. Yes, he did.
Did he wear his pants up to his chest, too, or his chin?
I hope not.
They would have looked a lot better. Yes, that's a riot. This is a Tinseltown scoop here. Not only Lassie, we're learning about Johnny Stampinato's shirts going to your uncle.
My Uncle Jerry.
What a riot. That's so funny.
6 degrees of separation.
Oh, my God. All right, now let's go to Thelma Todd. Hot Toddy. She was living with a really, you know, I found him to be a horrible controlling creep because he told her, come home at 2:01, 2 o'clock, and she said 2:01, allegedly. And what do you think about that?
He was a controlling creep, mm-hmm. and she was slipping away from him. More and more, and I think arguments had escalated in their household, hence that petty bickering of, you know, be home at 2, I'll be home at 2:01. She loved to party. He did not.
Well, he was a lot older than her, right?
Yes. You know, not hugely, but significantly to have been there, done that with the lifestyle she was involved in.
Right.
And she didn't come home at 2:01. She came home more like 4 in the morning. And it's funny, there was an... an actor named Paul Peterson.
Oh, I know him.
He was on the Donna Reed Show.
And he was a champion for child actors.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And his father drove... His father had a limousine company, and he drove Thelma home that night.
Oh, my goodness.
No, isn't that incredible?
Ernest
Peters.
Who knew? Jeez.
Paul Peterson's father.
Wow.
And he said that Thelma got out of the car and turned back to him. He often drove her, so she knew him well. Mm-hmm. And she said, I owe you some money. You know, call me tomorrow and we'll work it out. Mm-hmm. And up the stairs she went, never to be seen alive again.
Those stairs, man, that was some, because, you know, she was, she had had her fill of alcohol. How do you not fault me? You know, in my youth, I partied, you know, I didn't do drugs, but I like to go out and have drinks with my friends. And I don't know if I would have made it up those stairs, but allegedly she did. And he had locked her out. And someone said, oh, well, she was, you know, thoughtful and she didn't want to wake him up. And I'm like, please, she's bombed and she's PO'd. And you better believe, because if it was me, I'd be pounding on that thing saying, you know, swearing like a sailor. And, you know, come on. So I don't know.
Yeah, and they said there were kick marks on the door.
Yeah. Who blames her?
Even though they said her shoes weren't terribly scuffed.
Yeah.
But he did not open the door. And she said, F you, I'm going to another party. And she continued up some stairs to the street above their house. Mm-hmm. She stopped her car in her boyfriend's ex-wife's garage. Mm-hmm. So she makes it up to the garage. And now, you know, back in the day, those garages were really small. They were big enough just to house the car and nothing else. They didn't know about storage and garages back then.
Right.
So it would, I think they did a test to time how long it would take for that garage to fill up with
carbon monoxide,
fumes.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, really a matter of minutes, just a few minutes. So, you know, the story is that her boyfriend followed her up to that garage and said, you're not going. She got in the car, turned the car on. He said, you're not going anywhere. And he locked the garage. And he came back an hour later thinking she'd learned her lesson. And oops, she was dead. And he called the head of her studio, Joe Schenck, one of her, well, it wasn't her studio, but it was a very close friend of theirs. He was head of 20th. Mm-hmm. And he had helped Joe Schenck hide some money.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the guy he called to say, "I something horrible's happened and I need your help, or I'm going to jail." And so an elaborate plot was hatched, and rumors were spread that the mob wanted to buy her club down in the Palisades.
Making it a gambling den and all that stuff, yeah.
Yes, that they wanted to open a gambling, illegal gambling den on the third floor of her club down on Pacific Coast Highway, and that she refused. And there was even some sleazy movie. I think it was with Lonnie Anderson, wasn't it?
I saw it. It's on YouTube if you guys want to watch it. Thelma Todd.
You know, and they actually put her in bed with Lucky Luciano, and that never happened. I don't think that ever happened.
No, I don't believe all that. You know, I think it really comes down to exactly what you said.
Yes, it was just, you know, two people, you know, one filled with booze and one filled with rage and jealousy. And, you know, that's a dire formula.
Yeah, a bad combo, oil and water.
With his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean.